You are listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 125 for the week of November 17th, 2013. Welcome back to the longest-running podcast dedicated to George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series and occasionally HBO's Game of Thrones. As usual,
this is Ashley.
This is Amin, and we're joined by a special guest today.
This is Katie, Lady Griffin on the forums.
Welcome back, Katie. I think we've had you before on maybe an after show or something, but this is the first time we've had you on a main show.
Yeah, I was here once for the Blackwater episode, like a year ago.
Remember that, Ashley? That was a marathon. Yeah. You were there, right?
Yeah, that was a marathon.
Jeez,
I think I was there for part of it, maybe not all of it.
Most of it, I think. I think that set a lot of records that will probably never be broken.
Let's hope not. You get a little overboard.
So, Katie, how are you? Like, you're quite involved with, I guess, the forums and stuff like that. Like, what are you usually up to?
I'm not terribly active on the forums, but I do edit all the core episodes that we do over at VOK. Other than that, I really stick to the core of the forums. I get a little exhausted going anywhere else.
Cool. So we have a couple of chapters to go over today, but I guess just in terms of news that may be of interest is George is right now in Australia, or maybe he's left by now, but he was doing a tour of Australia. And one thing related to that is there's a meetup coming up for Podcast of Ice Fire listeners. I believe it's on the 29th of November. I'll post it up. Yeah, November 29th in Melbourne. So if you still want to get into that, comment with this episode. But in relation to George, somebody asked him a question about the fiddler, and George confirmed the fiddler was gay. You hear about that?
No.
Well, I've just seen people linking to it and going, ha ha, Kyle. So I'd like to think that the person who asked him that might be a listener, maybe.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Like, I think the guy, well, they haven't confirmed it yet, but I think maybe it was. We'll have to get Kyle's reaction.
We don't know, but we'll take it.
Yeah. But have you read The Mystery Knight, Katie? Or heard that episode? Or
I haven't read any Duncan Egg novellas, but I've listened to all the episodes, so I've been spoiled thoroughly.
Oh, no.
I'm waiting for them to all come out in the same trade paperback.
Yeah, I don't know. It's okay to be spoiled with those ones. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I could have just read a summary, to be honest, instead of going through it all.
Yeah, they sound like their quality declines after the first two.
I initially thought that. Like, the first time I read Mystery Knight, I was not impressed. But now that I've reread it and gone over it, I think it's good. It's gone back up there. The Hedge Knight is just, like, so... I mean, you could just pick up the Hedge Knight without even having read it, like, The Song of Ice and Fire, and not touch any of that and still enjoy it as a short story. But the Mystery Knight, you have to have, like, read it, Song of Ice and Fire, and get all the stuff to truly enjoy it, I think.
Yeah, I think it's so much backstory that you're just kind of, like, you don't feel like you're reading a story. You feel like you're reading a backstory, right? And so it's not as fun a read. You're just like, ugh, more Blackfyre crap.
The Silmarillion.
If only keep it in his pants, it would have prevented all this stuff. Aegon, worthy.
Yeah. So. Thanks to those damn Duncan Egg things, I'm starting to get all the Targaryens straight. I know who Aegon the Unworthy is now. Instead, they were just like a whole blur in before.
You ready for those Ice and Fire trivia games? I guess I will mention this now. If I didn't already like to build up my own ego or aggrandize myself, I helped start a court now called the Supreme Court of Westeros with Stefan Sasse from Boiled Leather. It's hosted at his blog, Nerdstream Era, and every week we will cover three questions, theory questions or anything really related to the Ice and Fire, and we always have a visiting judge that joins us each week. I'm hoping to get Ashley and other people from the podcast crew and listeners there eventually as well. But like anybody can be a visiting judge.
What you're just like an essay you're writing a week? On
basically,
a
yeah. Like the three questions are submitted a week. Like we pick from them and we schedule them. Like we have lots of questions submitted. We already have like 100 questions.
So, oh, wow.
But I'm scheduled for weeks and weeks ahead, which is great. But we cover three a week. I would do three a week. Stefan does three a week. Like each week we alternate. I start out like for example, like the week that just came up, I started it off. I put an opinion and then the other two read and respond to it. And then vice versa with Stefan. But we always have a third person that will join every week that's open. That can be anybody. So we always have a visiting judge that comes in and contributes. So yeah, we're trying that out, seeing how that goes. Stefan used to do this just by himself. Like he did that for a year, basically. Stefan's theory hour. But I was discussing with him and we thought like it'd be interesting to have more of a group discussion or a dynamic kind of thing. So
very cool.
See how that goes. The Supreme Court of Westeros. So we're waiting for somebody to challenge our authority. I thought somebody would challenge it, but so far the self-appointment is working. So there's that. Any other interesting news? Okay, yeah, I guess I'll still mention it. So I'm in contact with Damon Stone again from Fantasy Flight Games, who he's one of the card game designers, and he may be joining us as early as next week if we get scheduled, but probably December. But that means if you have any questions related to the card game, get them in as soon as possible so we can ask him that. Yeah. I think you're looking forward to that episode, Ashley, another gaming one.
Well, I've never played any of the games, so I'd feel weird if I was even there for it, because I'd just be like, yep. And that would be my input for the entire episode.
Well, I think especially for the card game compared to the board game, I'm not that I have the game, but I'm not that much of an expert. I'm still picking it up. So I think it'll be more of an explanatory podcast, explaining what it's about, how it works before we get to more in-depth questions.
Okay.
So I think any people will be able to get something out of it, but it's definitely a pop.
I could be there as the resident noob.
Perfect. Okay. And yeah, that's it. That's it for news that we have in here anyways. So let's jump into the chapters, and we are starting with, let's see, Tyrion, which Tyrion is this?
Nine.
Tyrion 9. Okay. And what we've decided to try out lately is let our guest hosts do the chapter summary, if you wish.
So, all right.
Katie.
Tyrion 9. After seeing Myrcella off the door, and Tyrion and the royal entourage are attacked by a starving mob in the streets of King's Landing, killing the High Septon, Aaron Santagar, and Sir Preston Greenfield. After beating the shit out of Joffrey and quelling the riots, Tyrion meets with Bronn and Varys in his quarters to stew and lick their wounds. That's all I got.
That's good. Excellent. It was like your Korra style coming through, I think. You're used to reviewing Korra episodes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Well, one thing that was right off the bat interesting is just Myrcella, again, reinforcing the fact that Myrcella is the most mature of Cersei's children. So that was cool, the way she handles everything.
I wonder why they picked Aerys Okhart to go with her. I mean, he seems kind of the younger and gentler of the White Knights that are around, so maybe it makes sense to send him off with her.
Yeah, I think when it comes to picking them, that they go based on who was the least brutish to send with Myrcella, because some of them are not people I would leave alone with small children.
I mean, yeah. It seems a bad idea because he's a marcher lord.
Did Aerys beat Sansa? I can't remember. I remember he was ashamed that he never did anything to stop her, but he actually have to beat her as well.
He did? Yeah, he feels badly about it, but he still does it when Joffrey asks him to.
I think he said that he did it once, and not very hard, and then Joffrey didn't pick him again because he didn't hit hard enough.
I like this chapter a lot. It's kind of like, in Clash of Kings especially, you go for these long periods of diplomacy that are suddenly punctuated by chapters of extreme violence. And so this one, in my memory, it was a lot longer than it actually is, but it's kind of tense and nauseating. Like, going through it makes me feel really squeamish and knowing that something awful is about to happen. And some of the people who get killed, they're not terribly significant, but later on in the books, like, their death leads to some major fallout several books on. And you'll have to remind me, when we're doing these chapters, are we allowed to talk about future chapters?
We are.
Oh, yeah.
Everything up to the end of Dance Dragons is good. So
like, with the fat High Septon who gets torn to shreds by the mob, I think he gets replaced by like some rube that Tyrion handpicks, but then Cersei replaces him eventually with that asshole who comes in and then dances with dragons.
Yeah.
This is like picking your pope, basically. They're like, if it doesn't fit you, they'll replace him with somebody else.
This is also the chapter where Tyrick Lannister goes missing.
Yes.
Which leads to one of my least favorite theories, that it's some masterstroke planning by Varys that this kid is being squirreled away for future purposes. He's dead. Guys, he's totally dead.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. I think he's somewhere because they've made that emphasis on it. And
so many times, they keep mentioning him over and over again.
But he's such like a useless character, and I think the only thing emphasizes is that Tywin and the Lannisters in general are just adamant and tenacious when it comes to their family. And I mean, if we're still looking for high schoolers who go missing on spring break 5 years ago in the Caribbean, I mean, it's not beyond reasoning that they're still looking for Tyrick Lannister almost a year after he goes missing.
My crackpot theory that has no basis whatsoever that I can figure out was that somehow he was linked to maybe being the next heir to Casterly Rock.
He's moving his way up the ladder, right? Like, people are
because,
getting...
Yeah, well, at that time, Jaime, not an option being in the Kingsguard, and there's no way Tywin would make Tyrion heir, so he needed to put someone there. So that was my thought.
I just hate the idea that every little detail is somehow part of a master plan. And in this case, Tyrion Lannister, he's not like a Benjen Stark, where you can, I don't know, like you can sense a deeper purpose to what, like where Benjen is and what happened to him. Tyrion Lannister is such like a nothing character that it's not, I don't think it's beyond reason that he's dead. He's super dead at the bottom of the bay.
He could be, but I mean, like, I guess you're tying into like the idea that Varys is the one who even got the push the crowd into actually riding, because that's two sides of that. It could be Varys pushed the crowd into doing that, or he just took advantage of the
thing. I would see it as taking advantage. I don't see this Varys master plan did everything, him and Littlefinger. I don't think everything was completely planned. It's just more taking advantage of chaos.
Mm.
Like, I don't believe he started the riot, but there is that specter in this chapter of, like, Tyrion, he feels very crafty when he's comparing himself to Cersei, how she's using the kettle blacks, and she thinks she's smart by sneaking out at night and winning these sellswords over when really Lancel is spying on her. But we know for a fact that Littlefinger already has the kettle blacks bought out, so Tyrion ends up looking like a fool, at least from a meta perspective.
And only, only in the reflection. Like, we didn't know this the first reading it, right? We had to get to the next book to figure that out for the reread, right?
Yeah, and even in that case, Cersei manages to win one of the kettle blacks anyways with her magic purse.
No, but it's really, you're right, it's really interesting. Like behind, Tyrion thinks he's like the mastermind, but Littlefinger's beat him out for the most part with the kettle blacks. And but then Littlefinger says how like even like putting a cloak on somebody like the kettle black can change him a little bit as well. So it's like, it's really complicated maneuvers here. But I do like how we get the bit of the Martells again here. This is through the first read set up for the Martells, because we haven't seen them, but we hear about like what they're up to and how they're being involved. Not much, but it's like, again, here's Doran again, kind of put one over Tyrion, because he probably would have done that anyways, just to put his army there to sit there and do nothing and get like a free hostage basically out of it.
Yeah. Stannis has this, we can talk about a little next chapter, but his perspective is a little different from what Tyrion is thinking about, even though they're speaking about the same thing.
So it's interesting that they want to send Myrcella through Braavos to get there, because even Stannis is not going to mess with Braavos, but Cersei is dumb enough to piss them off. Did you notice the ship names, by the way? Like the name of the ships?
Lady Lyanna, Lion Star, Robert's Hammer, Bold Wind.
Do they just get like Robert when he's drunk and they're like, hey, name another thing for the ship? Like, name all the ship.
Lady Lyanna.
I'm surprised he didn't name one of them Cersei's
purse. I can see Cersei being in love with that one's name. She'd want to get rid of that ship.
Yeah, there's some other ships that I think get built in Feast that are like Sweet Cersei or Queen Cersei or something.
And she makes one that's like bigger than Robert's Hammer or something. Check out.
Cersei.
The mob scene is so grotesque, though. Just the fact when that woman steps out with the dead baby and Sansa leans over, is like, throw a coin. Throw the coin at this woman who has her dead child.
Yeah. Does it bounce off the baby, like the coin?
Yeah, it's completely, like, Tyrion, he's hyper aware about the crowd is starving and really looking to eat them alive, whereas Cersei, her idea of putting the crowd at ease is laughing merrily as they ride along, you know, as if that's not going to piss everybody off further.
I get what you said, this was such a long chapter. I mean, like, in the first read of it, because you don't know what's going to happen. Anyone could have technically died here. So, chaotic.
We lose Santagar. We lose Preston Greenfield, who we know nothing about.
Yeah. Like, Santagar has no meaning when you first read it. How are you supposed to know he's Dornish? Like, he's mentioned it somewhere that he's Dornish, but it means nothing, I think. But
right.
It's like the one Dornish tie at the court, and then he gets his head bashed in there. Yeah, in his helmet. Yeah.
You lose lollies.
Oh, that paragraph when Tyrion's getting the damage report from Jacelyn Bywater is... Maybe it's just on reread. I find these things much harder to read, but I almost wanted to skip over that one. Don't like thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, that's... I mean, the Lawless rape is kind of... Like, George is criticized for that on some grounds. Like, some people criticize him. I mean, it's a very difficult debate to go into, but some people can't read that kind of stuff.
And it could just be Tyrion's filter of he's very glib about it, like he doesn't have a high opinion of her anyway. But it's
I think it's It's the Tyrion filter, and it pisses me off, all the, you know, the Tyrion supporters who think he's so awesome and wonderful. I'm like, are you reading these chapters? He's as bad as the rest of them when it comes to, you know, appearance and whatnot.
Sir Boros Blount and Meryn are...
They're whipped. They're verbally whipped, basically, this...
Oh, they're such weenies. They're when Cersei's like, get out in the crowd, you got to settle them down. They look at each other like, do we have, I mean, it's safer in here.
And Cersei's like, you should go naked to remind yourself that you're a man or something. Remind them that you're men.
It's interesting that Cersei, she backs Tyrion, though, when he, when his authority is being disrespected, she immediately snaps and says, you know, do your job. You're sworn.
Yeah.
I don't think that was so much her backing him as it is her just agreeing with him in that moment.
But she gets that they have to get Sansa back. She understands that. Yeah. They're just scared to go out there. Yeah.
Well, Cersei sees Sansa as the only reason Jaime's still alive.
Mm.
So that's why she's a little more desperate in that respect.
I mean, you must have liked this chapter, Ashley, right? There's a lot of
Hound. I've actually read it a few times, although I admit I'm still missing some details.
I mean, the Hound is big in the chapter, right? He saves Sansa. Yeah.
So. He's so concerned about his horse.
Yeah.
His horse is his best friend.
He's an animal lover. That's another thing to like about him, right?
He's very...
Horses don't lie.
It's almost adorable because he's like, I'm going back out there, but only to find my horse.
Yeah. It's like someone's going to pay if something happened to my horse.
That and the fact that he's not afraid of that mob at all.
Yeah. Mm-mm. The big contrast it's between him and tough. Like even who were they? So it's Boros and who's the other guy? Is it Trant or is it Moor that's a cowardly?
It's Meryn.
Meryn Trant. Yeah, where was Moor then? Is he still out there?
No, he's in the castle. They ask him where Sansa is since he was riding with her and he's like, Yeah, Baelon Swan, he's not a Kingsguard at this point, right? He's there too.
Hmm. Is Boros still alive at the end of the fifth book? He is, right? He's still just, like, eating and...
It's Trant that's dead, right?
How did Trant die?
Who's the one who dies in Blackwater?
That's Moor.
Moor dies in Blackwater. Oh. I think they're both around, but they're just... Like, I mean, it's just funny. Boros was a taste tester for a while. I don't know if he's still...
He's the worst.
Yeah.
But I guess Preston Greenfield, that opens up a space for Baelon Swan to become Kingsguard. I forget what the... I feel like there's a space for a long time that they don't fill until after Blackwater.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Greensfield went back to try to save the Septon, and he got torn apart as well. I mean, Septon got torn apart. He got killed.
Hmm.
But let's see what else we got here.
It's interesting at the end that Bronn is openly talking about killing Joffrey in front of Varys. It seems very tactless. Yeah. I guess he's so confident in his position that he doesn't care.
Yeah. Jalibur Joe was there, too. He was in the crowd.
He has nothing better to do.
We all know how important that character is.
Take back Red Flower Vale. We also get the line from Varys when I forget who's criticizing Joffrey, but Varys is saying an apprentice must be taught his trade, which could be foreshadowing.
Did they say that in the show as well, or somewhere else in the books? Because I did that before. They might have used the same line in the show. I think
it sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be foreshadowing for Aegon. Oh, and here's other foreshadowing or kind of setup is when he was asking the Hound to go out again and deal with the fires and sort of stuff, the Hound's eyes were like worried, and then he thought, oh no, like the Hound might stop because of the fire. It's kind of set up for what happened in the Blackwater, I mean. So
surprising that they don't have more fires in King's Landing. I assume that these are like mud and wattle houses. Or that even that they have water wagons. I thought that was a strange detail.
Well, I would think that fire is probably one of the bigger threats they have in the city.
It's one of the biggest cities. Isn't it the biggest city or is it one of the biggest, like in terms of population?
Got to be the biggest in Westeros.
It's the biggest, yeah. It's huge, so they got to deal. They have problems that other cities alone they have to deal with.
Tyrion worries about it getting to the alchemists, that street. He's like, let Fleabottom burn, but don't let it get to the alchemists.
Yeah, the problem with having read the series like such a long time ago and at a young age, I don't remember what I got the first read. I don't know if I understood with the wildfire stuff or the chain setup, like probably didn't. Probably was just like speeding through and enjoying it, but not getting these little hints.
Yeah, he mentions that he's still he's overworking the men to get the winches done, I think, on the bay.
Yeah, at this point, didn't have any clue about what the chain was for, but you knew that the alchemists were making wildfire and you didn't want them to catch on fire.
So everybody blames Tyrion. Like, he's the one taking the blame for this, not Joffrey. In terms of what's happened to the city in general and the bad conditions.
Well, from a commoner's perspective, it doesn't, like, of course they don't have any nuance on who's sitting the throne, yeah. But it's like, if you're eating, then that's, whoever puts food in your mouth, that's a good king. And so when they had food, when Robert was around, you know, he was a good king to them. And now that Tyrion's here, he's the catalyst that changed everything. Of course, they're going to blame him.
Hmm. Yeah, because Joffrey's obviously being poorly influenced by him.
Yeah, and was sent away. Janos was too honest. He got sent away. Pycelle was thrown in jail.
But yeah, I mean, Janos was, he was a commoner who was raised up. Hmm. And then Pycelle, he's been around for so long that he's kind of a staple of the court that at least, like, people on the outside would be familiar with.
Yeah. That goes back to the idea that I had in terms of, like, I mean, one reason Tywin sent Tyrion there is he has some skills and abilities, but do you think another reason was kind of take some of the blame as well?
Well, it just makes you so frustrated when, like, you know, us in our time reading these things and knowing how much there was such a big lack of information, and the only way they got information was through word of mouth, which was always horribly, horribly slanted and never accurate. And you're just like, how do these people know anything? And, well, yeah, Tyrion, think they don't have democracy. It'd be horrible.
And Tyrion, he says, you know, that he's a demon monkey, and his closest advisor is a spider and a sellsword, and his lady is a whore. Mm. I mean, to outward appearances, and plus he has Shagga riding around with him. I mean, to outward appearances, he's a freak show. So, and for an uneducated, you know, blacksmith or whatever, of course he's going to be the worst of the lot. But to him, I mean, he has his own biases, but he's not as judgmental as everyone else. So he doesn't mind really surrounding himself with lowly people.
Hmm. Well, he knows the value of people like this.
That's similar to Stannis. I mean, having the Onion Knight with him, like, they both were able to look past class to find useful people. Yeah, I guess that's all that I have, except for the, I guess we talked about the end where Bronn is suggesting that they kill Joffrey and go with. And Bronn is just so, like, relaxed in this chapter. Like, he just comes in and then he comes and just eats, like, Tyrion's dinner without asking. But on the other hand, he's really useful. I mean, like, earlier on, I think Boros was actually going to threaten Tyrion, and Bronn just, like, jumps in front of him, and he's, like, ready for that. So he's a very useful guy to have around.
He'll take it, yeah.
But, you know, if that fight had actually happened, Boros was dead, right?
Mm. Yeah. You mean Boros versus Bronn? Yeah, I think he would. I don't think he'd have made it.
We have to wonder what the qualifications were to make Kingsguard back in the day.
I mean, like, it's probably bought his way on, or it was put in for some reason.
Did something in the war, maybe.
Yeah. Who in the Kingsguard do you think doesn't go to the whorehouses and stuff?
You mean the one
Aerys
right
Okart?
Aerys Okart, okay, one.
Aelon Swan, maybe.
Aelon Swan doesn't, yeah.
And,
maybe Preston, since he went to try to save the Septon, so maybe he was still.
Yeah. Well, it seems like some of them took pride in their position, but some of them are also
so who does? So Boros for sure does. The Hound, we know, does. It's two.
Mandan, Fish Eyes.
Probably a four. He probably went for the weird stuff. Mandan, Moor. Let's looking about even here. So we have Boros, Hound, Mandan, Moor, Trant for sure. Loras probably goes Trant? There sometimes now to let off steam.
No, I think in the books he seems pretty.
Oh yeah,
free.
The book Loras, I guess. The Kettle Blacks for sure, right?
Yeah.
They go to Cersei, so.
And you gotta wonder about, like, the Kingsguard in the past, how much of it was just glorified, or if it's always been kind of that way. You know, some of them were especially good, and some of them just didn't, you know, took off a night.
But they do something, right? They're not even able to get married. Like, I mean, that's the Dornish view of it, right? They had, even one of them had a paramour. And was able to do that. But another one who actually had children and was married was, like, gelded and punished for that because created a family, which is too much for the Kingsguard. I mean, half the watch goes to the Molestown, right?
Well, I think it's more the concern that they'd father children that was the issue.
Mm.
And that would split their loyalty between family and the king. And they want all the loyalty to be towards the king. I get that aspect, but I mean, if you're not actually marrying them,
I also find it interesting that it's always been for life. I mean, that's good. It's interesting, but I it'd be interesting if you did like a 10-year service and then you left. You leave it.
Yeah, you got to think some of them get really old. I mean, what do you do when, you know, it's peacetime and Kingsguard's been around for 80-year-old guy on there? It's like, wouldn't you rather have someone new protecting you?
Well, usually when they have this, what they've done is when they have the seven, if three or four get really old, they stack them with, like, younger ones to counter.
The one Jamie replaced, didn't he die in his sleep? I think it'd be like an old dude.
A couple of them, I think, did, yeah. So they must have, like, they, when you had seven, that means essentially sometimes you maybe only had four that could be active duty, and you had three just, like, sitting in the capital. Like, just like, but wouldn't it be more efficient to have seven that are active duty?
that's what I mean.
Well, maybe they kind of did. They had, like, other people that weren't Kingsguard, but were just guards.
Kingsguard and waiting.
Yeah.
They smother the old ones in their sleep to get that damn white coke.
Well, you know what? There was an interesting theory about Dunk's time. I don't know where I read this. It was somewhere online, but it wasn't a complete crackpot. It was trying to draw from the, especially from the graphic novel, but from the writing, that the idea was that two of the Kingsguard were lovers. And it was building off from some comments or whatever. So that must have happened as well.
It could happen. I wouldn't be surprised.
That's where else could they could. That's a place they could go, right? In Westeros.
White Tower.
Yeah, they didn't want to get married, right? So
I wouldn't be surprised if there were a few people in Loras's position that, you know, took up the Kingsguard because of that.
Yeah, or the Black.
Or Maesters and whatnot.
Yeah, Maesters in particular, actually, like that would be you don't even have to be militant to go into them, right? So
yeah, for a Maester, once you're sent off, you're on your own pretty much. You don't got anyone looking over your shoulder.
All right. Are we good for that chapter, I guess? Or anything else for that chapter?
No, I'm out.
Fun, yeah. All right. So we have Davos, which Davos is 2, I believe.
We're only on Davos 2. Think
about that. I think he only has 4 chapters or 3.
They really make the most of it. I mean, Danny only has a couple chapters as well in the whole book, I think. So.
Well, this is a meaty chapter, right? This was actually pretty good. Davos 2. Davos rejoins Stannis' army outside the walls of Storm's End. Stannis attempts to treat with Sir Courtney Penrose, but Penrose refuses to give up Edric Storm. Stannis then enlists Davos' help to smuggle Melisandre under the walls of Storm's End, where she gives birth to a shadow to assassinate Sir Courtney. I love this chapter. Davos and Stannis, their relationship is one of my favorite in the books, and so this is just, it's like a nice meaty sandwich. I like biting into it.
It's a meat and onions kind of chapter. So.
Oh, it's so good. He makes Stannis laugh, and Stannis says, "I missed you." It's very romantic.
Best buds till the end.
It is interesting, like, Sir Courtney, he starts out, he's pretty cool. He's a pretty cool dude. He starts out pretty courteous, and then, I mean, there's two roads you could take. Like, either he's calling Stannis' bluff because he knows Stannis won't fight him one-on-one, or he does what Davos suggests later in the chapter, which is that he's trying to go out with honor. He does throw a glove in Stannis' face, which is pretty great.
Yeah, he assaults he's like, may the others bugger the Lord of Light.
His arse with your red flag.
I mean, it's just an insult, but it was interesting that he said the others in the Lord. Like, why is he so scared about Stannis taking the kid? Like, how can he, like, know about this? He heard stories or something? Like, why would he care?
I think he has to know, like, why else would Stannis want his brother's bastard unless it was for nefarious purposes? But also, I think if this guy has been around Storm's Inn enough, then he's probably grown up around Stannis and knows that he did not like his older brother. And so maybe he has bad feelings about surrendering Robert's bastard.
But at this point, hasn't there been quite a few burnings going on? I think he has reasons to be suspicious.
What I was thinking is, like, why is he thinking about, like, you know, like, the sacrifice, things like that? But you're right, Katie, that maybe he just was worried he might just get killed, just in terms of just succession or just being annoyed with him or whatever. Not, like, per se sacrifice him for some magical purpose.
Or maybe he knew about what Cersei had been doing too, and thought there was connection to that. Yeah, just getting rid of all the bastards.
It just could be an honor.
Yeah, not anything. Losing her is a problem with this call. We lost you for a while. I don't know. We lost you for a while.
Ooh, okay.
You were just saying that, like, it might be an honor thing for Penrose, and then you got cut off. So.
Oh, okay. I don't remember what I was saying.
Cool. But, I mean, you might be right. It could be, like, he wanted a way out, But I just find it interesting that they had all these different stories about how Renly might have died. Different rumors.
It's interesting that Stannis is such an ass. So all these guys who are with him, yeah, who chatter like magpies and with less sense, I will have quiet. The king's eyes fell on Davos. Ser, ride with me. And then they ride off by themselves.
Yeah, they just like leave him sitting there.
It's interesting, like, he picks and Davos kind of calls him on it, and it's not like he has much choice in the matter, but he picks and chooses his treasons, where he kind of, he makes a big stink about what Ser Courtney is doing, but then Davos tells him, you know, you've pardoned these guys who were with Renly just a few nights ago. And so, I don't know, he's not as fixed in his morals as I think he always crows about. Yeah, I mean, he's a total weasel. But it's also interesting that he seems to be implying that, you know, when he takes the crown, that will be the time for revenge on these guys who were sitting on the fence.
Uh-oh. Yeah. He's not as rigid as people say, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's better that, I feel over the books, he starts to become even more flexible than expected.
Yeah, but the thing is, he doesn't think he's being it. And that's what is annoying, is that he thinks that he's still being completely fair in judgment and, you know, yeah, fair judgment. And it's like, you're an asshole.
Well, at least he listens to Davos and is willing to hear it out. I mean, half the other people would just
after
kill
he
Davos.
Throws him in a dungeon.
But he lets him out afterwards. Like, the other people wouldn't have let him out.
I mean, Davos is so unflinchingly loyal to Stannis, but I don't think Stannis, like, it's not a two-way road where I don't think Stannis would like Davos as much if he ever contradicted him, which, I mean, we see that later in Storm, but it's interesting that when Stannis asks him to be this asset to assassination, that Davos, he feels saddened by it, as if he's being misused, or it's almost like a betrayal on his part, where he feels like he doesn't expect much for his loyalty, but at least, you know, to be used fairly as a pawn.
Oh, even a couple of chapters before, when they had that oath, it's like, I pledge not to ask you to bring you into dishonor or whatever, but like the Lord thing, and now he's doing that, he's breaking that kind of pledge.
There's a lot of good quotes in this chapter.
Oh, there's tons. I mean, earlier on, like, we find out that Stannis has been having nightmares, which is important, just to know that that's related to shadows and stuff like that, but only Melisandre can soothe them to bed, to rest, to sleep.
And we learn about that later.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's actually, he says that he saw, like, he has memories of the murder, even though he wasn't there. So maybe he is actually inside the shadow when it takes place, like, consciously, his mind is floating there.
It's not necessarily, like, we've been talking about shadow baby or things like that, but it might be even more connected than that. Like, it actually is his shadow, because he's having memories of it, that sort of stuff. So it's just like, even though it's being birthed through her, it's connected to his consciousness or to his memory somehow. And certainly draining him by doing so.
Robert could piss in a cup and call it wine, but I offer them pure cold water and they squint in suspicion and mutter about how queer it tastes.
Yeah.
Then he puts salt in his water later.
Yeah, like, why does he put salt in his water? What's up with that?
That's over the top.
He's a health freak. He's just trying to clear out his sinuses or something.
But, no, I think he's just gross.
Davos wanted wine too. He's like, I wish this was wine.
The day I take counsel from a Lysine brigand is the day I put down my crown and take the black.
Yeah, because that's an idea that he may eventually join the, like, the wall. I mean, take the black if Dany comes over. So that's kind of cool. He said that. I mean, Salador Salan's still around. Trade him, but it's still around. Now, who do you think called Davos first the Onion Knight? Because I heard the idea that maybe it was, in fact, Stannis who gave him that nickname.
It had to be. I mean,
somebody else could have coined it, but I think it would be cool if he was the one to actually coin him, the Onion Knight.
Oh, that seems a little too familiar if it was like I'm just meeting him. Seems like a name that, you know, everyone would have just called him because he brought them food and then it just stuck.
We get some of his grandfather in this episode, this chapter.
Yeah.
Mr. Mom. I forgot about that.
Is that the same? Is it that guy that marries, like, the Dornish girl, or is it his...
I think it's a different Eastermont. No, maybe it's the same, because isn't she gets married to...
A really old guy. I don't know if it's...
Spotted Silva. I mean, he's kind of in the camp of...
Does it have his first name here, or is it just Lord Estermont?
It's just Lord Estermont. Like, he's not totally in the wrong. He's kind of got the older knight perspective of why should we waste thousands of lives when we could have this over with just a single combat. I mean, not that the single combat is a better option, but...
What isn't necessarily, I mean, like, the idea with single combat is that they might still have a fluke loss, right?
Right.
Other than that, if they win, do they expect Kodrani to go to follow it or not to do it? Is a question. His son, Eldon, marries Silva. But I think Eldon is also pretty old. 70 years old.
Hmm.
I think we're going to see him more. Like I guess he's on the island still. He might be a captive now.
From the Golden Company, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
I used to have a crackpot theory years and years ago from this chapter and from the first Davos chapter where you remember in the first Davos chapter where we get that that story from Salladhor Saan about Azor Ahai and making Lightbringer.
Mm-hmm.
At first he forged it and it shattered. Then he forged it in a lion's heart and it shattered. And only when he stabbed his Nissa was it true. I had a theory since Stannis's sword was a false Lightbringer that it wasn't, like it hadn't been forged properly yet. And so I was like, who would be Stannis's Nissa? Who does he love more than anybody? And so my crackpot theory years and years ago was that he was going to have to kill Davos to make it Lightbringer.
Because
he trusts him. I mean, maybe just because Davos is so honest with him, but he does confide in him in a way that he doesn't with anybody else.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like the TV show Davos is the one thing that even makes TV Stannis have a chance to win over people. Mm. TV Stannis is even worse. that relationship is there.
Davos comes off as almost a rube at the end when he's in the boat with Melisandre. I mean, she doesn't come off very good at all with birthing the shadow, but from her perspective, he's a superstitious heathen who worships statues and false gods. And he's not speaking from a point of reason. He's just saying, I don't feel good about this. It seems treacherous in a way that he can't put his finger on, which is paranoid behavior. So from her perspective, he's just like a native who doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Well, they have an interesting discussion in terms of he's more of a gray point of view. And then she's like, oh, half a rotting onion is just a rotting onion, good or bad. So they have that kind of debate.
It's a little strange that we're jumping all over the place, but
sure.
Some of the dudes who are with Stannis now, I forget, it's like there's a Parman Crane and Cuey, yep. And like the Rainbow Guard, they're still there, and some of them are still wearing their rainbow cloaks.
Hmm. I mean, Penrose calls him out on that, right? He's like, oh, you dare to still wear that after failing Renly?
Mm-hmm. He defends Brienne, too.
Hmm. I think a bunch of them die in Blackwater, right? A bunch of these guys.
Knights of Summer, yeah.
Hmm. And then we hear about the whole Littlefinger story about like the patch face and the horns on Stannis' head is ruining their story because it's getting there first and kind of just like poisoning the well, as they say, making it all seem like stories that are made up, but people like to believe them because they don't like Stannis.
Yeah, Davos has a point. He says it doesn't matter if people believe it; they like telling it, and so it's going to spread faster to people who might actually credence to it.
Mm. You say you wanted to talk about Stannis' point of view on the Martell troops?
Oh, if I can remember what he said. Like, he mentions that something about Martell sending his troops into the mountains to potentially harry the Marcher Lords. And I don't know if it seems like Stannis actually thinks that Martell is going to do anything, whereas Tyrion seems very set in the idea that the Martells don't attack anybody unless somebody invades Dorne.
Tyrion says Stannis is not dumb enough to attack them, but he doesn't want to be caught just bogged down in this whole like sieging Storm's End. It'd be better to have control of it in any situation. But you're right. Like it does. Even the fact that they're there has an effect on Stannis. He's worried about them somewhat, but partly because like Storm's End should be under Stannis's command. It's a useful garrison, a useful place to have. And if he's stuck outside sieging it while his enemy army is moving around, it'd be bad.
They mention I forget which lord suggests it, but they mentioned bringing in Sir Courtney's father and hanging him in front of the walls of Storm's End, which is something that gets done to Edmure much later in front of River Run. And Stannis, he doesn't really give his opinion on it. He's just tossing all these opinions from his other lords to Davos to see what he says. But I wonder if it's not like he's unopposed to it, but still, after what he went through at Storm's End and having to watch Mace Tyrell stuff his face beyond the wall, it seems like he would have maybe a disagreement with him. He's past the point of maybe those standards of honor, though.
Well, I mean, he's done this thing later. He does it later on as well. I mean, first of all, he said like these ideas are going to be stupid from the start, so I don't think he really believes them. He's just kind of just testing them out with Davos to see his opinion. Like he does this later on when like some people were like, hey, we should go sack that island instead of fighting the Lannisters. And then Davos is like, that's a really stupid thing. And he's like, I agree. Like, so I don't think he really wanted to do these things. He's just kind of testing for Davos' opinion. There's a lot of key points in here. I mean, they talk about the peach and stuff and how he felt bad about Renly dying.
And really, it wasn't anything significant. He's just he's focusing on that one point because I don't think it's in Stannis' nature to understand that kind of gesture.
Which is
just snark.
In relation to why Storm's End has to fall, is like he can't afford defeats. He doesn't have people loving him, so he has to win battles to build up his power base. And he mentions that. So,
wasn't there also the concern that if he leaves it undefeated at his flank, that Loras and Tyrell are going to come in back from Bitterbridge and possibly round up with the people still left at Storm's End?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, like, and that's a, I mean, 60,000 foot is a huge army, and they've lost that because Loras got there first. That was like the war right then. If Stannis got all those troops there, he wouldn't have been backstabbed by them later. So maybe they should have sent something faster than they did.
I mean, it's not necessary to the plot, but it'd be interesting to know what was going on at Bitterbridge during this entire book. Yeah.
I think what we know, I don't know, earlier or later, but Randall Tarly has been killing or capturing the guys that were sent to take over the army, and he took it over himself.
So Littlefinger, he goes and stays down there like to negotiate for a good chunk of the book.
Mm-hmm. Actually, they do mention in the earlier chapter about how Littlefinger went down there, and they hadn't heard from him. They're like, oh, maybe he's dead, and Tyrion's like, no, if he's dead, I'm a giant. So I could just die on the road.
Be killed by bandits. That would be a fitting end.
Littlefinger does have his downfall. I mean, it's all predicted that he will, and probably at the Sansa, though. But do you think he'll be then just be killed by bandits on the way out or something? Something he just couldn't plan for.
Michal's theory from Inca's Reign on the forums, her longstanding prediction is that he's going to get, like, a fever or something. He's going to die from dysentery.
He gets STD.
Or grayscale. I mean,
ooh, grayscale.
I think, yeah, withering away in a bed, I think, would be a good way for him to go. Something he has no way of weaseling out of.
Hmm.
We see Florent a lot in this episode. I keep saying episode. We see Florent a lot in this chapter. He's just, they're like the phrase. Then that like completely without any loyalty or moral compunction. He's the one that suggests hanging Lord Penrose.
They're the phrase with a bit higher blood, but still similar to them, lots of them. And actually, they're analogous to the phrase again because they were that risky family for the Tyrells, just like the phrase of risky for the Tullys. Mm. They're a secondary powerful family that's waiting to kind of move in and become a grand family.
It's not a bad tactic to have. It's just that George writes them in the phrase. It's just gross people.
Yeah. Well, the phrase are like weasels, but also Florents have like their ears or something.
Yeah, they're foxes.
Yeah.
Where do the Fossilways sit in the line of succession power-ish?
Are they actually in the Stormlands? Houses. Yeah, that's a question. Like, I mean, they're here with Stannis, but where's their house? I thought they were more of a Reach type.
Well, you got the red and the green ones. So, like, isn't one on one side and one on the other or something? Or am I thinking of Duncan Egg?
That's where they started, but, like, that's when the line kind of broke up like that. But I think that, I mean, they have two guys from either side here. Interesting. They're in the Reach. I mean, there are some Reach people that are with Stannis. That's the interesting. Like, he's got some Reach people with him, and he's lost some of his foot to the Tyrells that were just sitting at Bitterbridge. It's all messed up.
You know, since the whole Tywin, you know, being blocked off and whatnot couldn't be predicted, what do you think Littlefinger's plan was at this point? Because at this point, King's Landing seems kind of doomed.
That's why he left, I guess. Because he can always... He could work well with the Tyrells, and no matter what happens, right? They're a useful force.
He'd just be like, I'm staying here with you guys.
Well, I guess a Tyrell-Aaron alliance later on could be useful if the Lannister thing had completely fallen apart.
People need to write more fan fiction on this stuff.
If we're getting to a lot of the core aspect of this chapter, there's so much in this chapter, but just talking about the vision that Melisandre had about Stannis getting beaten by Renly at King's Landing. And it's like, I mean, possible futures or whatever, but that's what happened. I mean, was that pretty much set in stone? Are some of these visions just can't be changed at all? Because that's what happened. Like, and they just misinterpreted it.
Yeah, but Davos, he points out that the only reason that Stannis was able to get Renly's army, or was yeah. able to secure victory at Storm's End, was because he actually went to Storm's End. They're almost like they're floating in the air, and they only come to fruition if you grab them. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a possible path.
The thing is, they happen just no matter what you do. It just sometimes you go a different path. Like when we heard earlier when we were talking about the North, and Bran had the dreams of people dying, and then Roderick was like, "Okay, I won't send, I won't take this guy with me. I'll leave him in Winterfell," and then he dies in Winterfell. It's just like you can try what you'd want, but you just end up causing it in the first place. Well, it's annoying. You can't change it.
I think Melisandre's just trolling Davos at the end when they're on the boat. Because it's this ludicrous, like, she's playing up the theatrics so much, and she's a theatrical person by nature, but he's like, "Well, you killed Renly," and her eyes light up like fire. "Not I." Like, just goading him to ask these stupid questions about how she assassinated Renly.
Yeah. Well, she didn't actually, like, pull the trigger. She just birthed... Like, I mean, the shadow was Stannis or his child, right?
She's still responsible.
Yeah, she's responsible for sure, yeah. But I mean, yeah, she gives a BS answer. She's like, "Shadows are children of the light. You need light." And it's just like, that's just the Ring's kind of BS. Like, no, there's something up with the shadows.
Well, yeah, she and Davos have this really prolonged semantical debate about what is darkness good or evil. And he's like, "Well, darkness will protect us as we're out on the water." She's like, "No, fire will protect us because they won't be able to see us if they're huddled around the torches." It's like, both of these are correct.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of like an analogy for all the prophecies. It's like you can always see it, you know, hindsight, everything looks clear, but going forward, you can make that prophecy apply to anything, and it makes sense.
And Stannis himself was talking about that earlier, how there's multiple shadows and multiple kind of futures, but I mean, both of them worked out. Both the things that happened. He got the army, and then he got beaten by, quote, Renly. So...
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's because you're looking at it in hindsight.
Yeah.
I mean, if a different outcome happened, you could still say... "Oh, it was because of Renly, because this and this and this. Therefore, it was correct." Like, you can twist these things in hindsight to be anything.
That's true. But I'm just saying, like, it's correct in the sense that he couldn't change it. Like, it was useless knowing about it. It didn't help him. It only, like, caused it. Like, what's the point of them if they can't even help you out? I guess the time in the middle is affected by that. So if you are going to die in 10 years, you can savor the 10 years, or you can just try everything you can to prevent it in 10 years and just die anyways. Mm. So that's what the prophecy says, right?
Poor Stannis. I'm out of things.
Oh, the one thing I mentioned is, like, I mean, I don't know if it was this. Yeah, it was this chat. Melisandre's just like, "Yeah, I am named Melisandre." Not that, like, "I am Melisandre." I mean, we know that later. That's what happened. She didn't start out with that name.
Melanie.
Like her or hate her, so she is a very interesting character and is playing a huge role right now. So, and it seems like at this point, like, I mean, there's all these people whispering about her and complaining about it. She hasn't built up the power base that she built later up, or like people that are left later on are even more devoted than people who just have joined Stannis now and were like, "Why is it this priestess here?"
I really feel like her character is purposely designed to be our enemy just based because of how people perceive her, but never based on her actions. I feel like, you know, it's all perception with why most people don't like her. And honestly, if the books were written any other way, we wouldn't have an issue with her.
Well, I mean, that's why it was interesting that he gave her that chapter in Dance of Dragons, because before then, like, there's anything could have been, like, open in terms of theories. And, like, at least we know that she believes she's doing the right thing. She could still be doing the wrong thing. Before, she could have been, like, a deliberate plant for the others or something like that. We would never know.
I wish we hadn't gotten that chapter.
Well, that's the idea. Maybe that chapter was given for a specific reason. There had to be some use of it, like a shadow baby in Dance Dragons.
Like, genuinely, I think the only reason it was put there was so that we could see what she was saying in the fire, which was Jon becoming a wolf, becoming a man.
Yeah.
Because there's no other way to get that foreshadowing without seeing it through her eyes, unless she tells Jon, and I don't see what she would.
Yeah, she's one of those characters that are better off stage than on, like, more is less is more.
It's like getting a Littlefinger point of view in, like, the first book.
Exactly. I would never want to have a Littlefinger point of view. I think that would ruin his character.
Unless it's like the last chapter where he's like, "Got his fever." It's like,
nope. I don't want it ruined.
So you don't want it ever.
I don't want his point of view at all.
Okay, yeah. Because, I mean, like, first of all, it'd be so hard to meet everyone's expectations of it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It'll ruin the character.
I mean, how... I imagine the inside of his head is not that interesting. I think he's built up... He has this mystique about him because he's succeeded.
Well, that's exactly it. You're going to be disappointed that if you end the books without going in there, then the legend lives on, kind of thing. He's... Never mind.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
I mean, if he had been losing consistently, I don't think there'd be as much mystery about what his goals are. Because honestly, I don't know if he has any long-term goals besides that ridiculous plan he has for Sansa. It seems like when something happens, he has enough contingency plans that he can just find it out and takes it.
I think that was part of some of the disappointment some people had with the show, because it showed all this stuff going on. Because it's a show, you can kind of see it there. You can't. I mean, you could technically try to hide it till the fourth season or something, and then reveal it, but then not the angle they went with. So some people didn't like that.
Yeah, well, it's like even George said, Littlefinger in the show is not his Littlefinger. Like, it's different enough that he pointed it out.
He's such a guy who he keeps his emotions in such tight check, and they made him very openly earnest and
whiny
and chat. No, I love you. You know, just. Stuff that he would never do, even if that's what he was feeling in the book.
Nope, they ruined his character.
Okay, well, I think that's it for that chapter.
Yep.
Do you have anything else? Great, thanks for joining us, Katie. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So yeah, keep listening and check us out on our homepage and our forums, APOIF on Twitter and Tumblr, and on DeviantArt. We're still working on the art project, MS Paint project for the third book, Storm of Swords. Making progress, but take part in that if you wish. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I'll cut that part out. But, but thanks for joining us. Oh, cool. So Ashley and I are going to go on to do a BOK episode on Strand's Gate anime. This is after show, but a final point. I wanted to make a point for anybody who's listening. I've got a few other BOK episodes coming up, but I just want to see if anyone's played the game Asheron's Call, post a comment for this episode. I'm trying to find some people who play that game, Asheron's Call. Okay.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to grab some water if you need to grab a snack or water or something like that.
Yeah, at this point, I'm just trying to stay awake.
Okay, sir. I'll be back at 5 and then we can do it then.
Okay.
Good? Okay. Are you still recording, editing that episode then, Katie? Like for the, because you did a finale review, right?
Yeah, we did the four last episodes as one episode, but it's, I fell behind a little this week. I'm stretched thin. I have some company unexpectedly dropping it, so that's driving me a little crazy.
Now you know how it is to have a podcast, basically.
Yeah, I'm almost done with it. I also have my Mass Effect podcast to edit, and that's taking way longer because it's huge.
You know what's appropriate is your icon here. For the chapters, because you have the shadow baby.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That's what my icon was.
Okay, episode 125. For the week of, edit this in time. Yeah, November 17th. Okay, and see if I want my news thing later. Ready? Do one of you have a recorder, just in case mine doesn't work? I think you have it, Katie, right?
Yeah, mine's running.
You heard about what happened to mine.
What happened to yours?
I updated it, and then it wanted money, and now it won't work.
Apple products wanting money, that's a surprise. Well, it's not Apple, right? It's some other third party.
Yeah, no, it was. When I updated it, that kind of screwed it all up. And, yeah.
Now you know what to ask for Christmas, then. It's a new key for record. Okay.
We don't have any links to BOK or VOK on our main page, do we? I always have to go through the forums to find them.
Mimi put links on the main page, but they're just like at the bottom. I was hoping to put them at the top because there's actually room there, right? You could put a VOK and a VOK there. And one of them is broken, like the VOK. But that's where it should be, right? Like there's room there for BOK, VOK. Mm-hmm. There's a gap.
Yeah, I always just have a pain. I have to go through like Twitter posts to try to find these things.
Yeah.
I just Google it.
Yeah, Google. Or like, I mean, bok.podcastadviceandfire actually takes you there.com. But I was trying to get VOK to do that, and it wasn't doing that. So just doing that now. Mm-hmm. bok.podcastadviceandfire.com. No, that's still for some reason. Mimi is the key for the website stuff. Like, even though I have access, like, I don't want to mess things up. So.
And now is not exactly the time to be bothering her.
Yeah.
She's sick?
No, she's not sick. She'll be fine. She's just recovering. But we can't go into details of, like, there's no harm of her like being hurt or anything. So.
Right.
Good. How are we feeling? Ready to start?
Yep,
I'm good.
Okay, here we go. Recorder set. Okay.